Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve Canine Kim, joined as always from San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, man. How you doing?
Doing well. After a big weekend in Las Vegas, the boxing season is in full effect. Folks, we're going to take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. Join in at 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or comment, you can do so at Gabriel_Montoya, at Steve Max Boxing, or at Max Boxing Live. But let's get started with round number one from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. It was the return of Canelo and his pay-per-view A-side debut. He was successful in winning what was technically a middleweight fight, stopping Alfred Angulo in 10 rounds. He moves to 43-1-1. On this undercard, Leo Santa Cruz retains his WBC junior featherweight title, easily outpointing Christian Mahars by the scores of 119-109 and two cards at 120-108. Lightweights in action, late replacement, Sergio Yeo Thompson with a 10-round decision over Ricardo Alvarez. And in another lightweight feature, an eliminator in the WBC, Jorge Linares looks sharp in easily dispatching tough Japanese guy, Nahito Arakawa. Gabe, Saul Alvarez, I think that he went from facing Sandy Koufax or Randy Johnson in his prime to slow-pitch softball. Now, the question is, was Canelo that good, or was Angulo that slow and ponderous?
A little bit of both, I think. You know, I think Canelo, from the waist up, is a great offensive fighter. He's got all the punches. I really love the way he sets up his rear uppercut. I thought that was the key to the fight. If Angulo had no answers for it, which he didn't, then he wouldn't really have much of a chance. But I think a few things happened here. You know, for one, that first punch that was landed about 5 seconds into the fight, this left hook that Angulo just walked right into, and it really kind of jammed up his head, jammed up his neck, and you could see it. It shook him to his feet. He was really hurt, and he hit it very well. And either that or Canelo just, he didn't fully, like, step on the gas, and he just put a beat down in that first round on a very complicit Angulo. A lot of people keep saying, what happened? They think he was overtrained, this and that. Angulo was always going to be the slow guy, but I think he got caught really fast, and he never quite got into the fight because he got hurt so quickly. But I think there was a multitude of things that went wrong, and we can go back and forth sort of going a long monologue. But I think the training on some level, at least on the Virgil Hunter end, was not so good. I think he might have been overtrained a little bit.
Gabe, Angulo has never been a speed demon. That's not a newsflash, but this was evident from the very onset of the fight. It looked like he was underwater, as I like to say. And before the fight, about an hour during the undercard, I talked to veteran referee Joe Cortez, who said, who do you like? And I said, I like Canelo to win this fight. I think it might be a little bit tough in the beginning. And he said, Steve, I like Canelo big. And I said, really? And he said, easy. And he said, watch those body shots early. And Gabe, you referenced the left hook. And I literally think in the first 10 to 15 seconds, he walked to the middle of the ring, hit him with some really good right hands. But that body shot right underneath his guard, right on the rib cage, I think slowed him down. He took the air out of the balloon. And I've always said about Alvarez, he's not as fast as some of the ultra-quick guys, like let's say a Roy Jones in his prime, an athletic Zab Judah, or certainly Floyd Mayweather, who outboxed him in September. But he's always had what I describe as good functional quickness. He has a very compact punch. He's a little bit mechanical, but he's also very straight and also fundamentally sound. And I actually think his craft is underrated. And I thought from the very beginning, he took control of this fight and he did something very important, Gabe. He backed him up early, and like you said, he buzzed him. And from that point on, we know this about Angulo. He's a guy that's got to build up momentum. He's got to come downhill on you. And quite frankly, he never really got on track.
No, he didn't, you know, and speaking of track, we'll get into the training of Angulo, and what I think happened was a bit of schizophrenia. on one hand, he had consistency. It's a fourth cap with Virgil Hunter. It's usually when, you know, trainer and new fighter start to really gel. It was his third camp with Remy Korchemny and doing the track training. So he was getting some consistency with Remy, and who had kind of got to understand who he was training and know how to push him and when to. But I think in terms of the nutrition, there was a lot going wrong. I don't think Angulo fully understood how to be hydrated until very late in the process. I think there was some, in terms of the way he lost the weight and then rehydrated, I think they got off protocol there. And so I think there was a little bit of push and pull of the snack system team, which is Korchemny and Victor Conte, and that whole undisputed group who does the hypoxic boxing training with him, like Mike Basil and those guys. There's a big part of the team that does that, but Angulo wasn't doing all that stuff. He's only doing some of it. So while all that stuff isn't the difference between winning and losing, I think that in terms of having him in the tip-top shape that he could have been and the kind of energy that he showed against Lara, whereas he was flat here, I think that there was some sort of issue there. But overall, I think you're right. I mean, the technical mastery of the fight belonged to Canelo. You know, I think the way he decided to fight, it's kind of like, you know, the Mayweather fight, the things that he learned, the things that he did wrong, he was adopted things that worked against him. He was using a check hook. He fought at kind of his normal pace, which is to take the center of the ring, stay off the ropes. He got a little bit careless late in the fight as he tired. But generally, he kept things behind a heavy jab and just worked in punches. I think he's becoming more relaxed, more fluid, and remaining that patient boxer that he's always been. He's only 23 years old, and, you know, when your only loss is to the best fighter in the game or the best boxer, certainly, that's not too much of a bad thing. It's something to build on. But at the same time, this was great matchmaking, and I felt more confident about Angulo heading into the Lara fight than I did in this fight because of the punishment he took in that Lara fight. I imagine you want to set up how the fight ended, but I thought he got bad advice all night in the corner. I just think when a guy speaks as limited English as Angulo does, why are you giving him Tony Robbins motivational speeches? Keep it simple, keep it to fighting, and you know, enough of the Morpheus stuff. That works for some people, but I don't think it would really work with Angulo, and I've known Angulo a very, very long time.
Sal Alvarez learned one thing back on September 14th. You don't play chess with Bobby Fischer. And tonight was a game of not even Chinese checkers. Saturday night was just checkers. And he just had an easy run of it. I mean, the openings that he couldn't see against Floyd Mayweather that were simply not available at times and that disappeared right in front of him, they were wide open against Angulo. And I also think, we got to bring this up, Alvarez didn't make weight. And instead of becoming a 152-pounder, which he really shouldn't be at, but from a contractual and financial standpoint, he had no choice. Well, now here he could become technically a middleweight. And those 4 or 5 pounds, when your body fat is at that level, they are huge in terms of your energy stores. And this is one of the few fights where I thought he had a second win. Now we got to get to this quote-unquote controversy. I completely disagree with anyone that questions Tony Weeks, who's a world-class referee. I haven't agreed with every single call, but I think he's one of the best that we have. And you look at the scorecards, 89-82, 88-83, I thought after a bit of a rally in the eighth, I thought Angulo was taking another battering in the ninth, and then when that tenth round started, 50-some-odd seconds in, he takes a big uppercut, and his head pops up like a Pez dispenser. I think it's not about that one punch. Not every stoppage is the same, and you have to look at the context of where the fight is and what has happened up to that point. In my opinion, there was not going to be a miracle. There was not going to be a 10-run home run. This was not going to be Bay Molina. I think it would have been a sustained beating where another 50, 60, 70 punches would have gone off the head of Angulo, which he simply does not need. I think Tony Weeks absolutely, positively, Gabe, made the correct call.
100% agree. It wasn't like he had shook Canelo at any point. He started to get to him, but even, you know, when Canelo was sitting on the ropes and telling Angulo, come on in, you know, and hit me, it wasn't like he sat there like Ricardo Mayorga and let him hit him. He let Angulo come in and waste his aggression. And I thought even in the middle fight when, you know, round six, Canelo started to tire a bit and was taking a bit of a breather. Angulo was too beat up by that point and too slow to really do anything about it. So it wasn't like he was having moments when Canelo stopped having moments. He wasn't really even having moments then. I think Tony is an expert in this area and somebody we should trust. And yeah, I didn't have a problem with it. And And to jump back to your point about the weight, you know, to those people that say those 2 pounds didn't matter in the Mayweather fight, what does it say when we have more data now and he didn't even make the 54 limit in his very next fight? I just can't believe that it didn't have any effect. And then not making the weight probably had a little bit of an effect in terms of energy. You know, we interviewed Salido last week on Leaving in the Ring, and he talked about it, like, I wasn't going to go any further down because I wanted to win the fight, and I didn't want to completely damage my health forever. The weight issue is still something that creeps up, and we got to look at it. And my question is, you know, how many more times are we going to just pay it off and not really care? Like, here's 100 grand. I just made my own kind of weight limit at the last second.
Well, Gabe, that's that old thing. Whoever has the gold rule, because that's the golden rule, and a guy like Canelo, who has a franchise, who has money to throw around, can make up his own rules, and that's what he did. And I've always said, until the commissions themselves or the regulatory bodies make the penalties more harsh and the networks get involved and start throwing around some accountability, this will be business as usual. With that being said, I'm not so sure how easily we can quantify what the difference was, because Angulo is simply a different animal, and I don't mean pedo, than Floyd Mayweather. Gabe, looking at the undercard, I have been a huge advocate of Leo Santa Cruz since the time he's been a prospect out here fighting for Top Rank, when he got released, and his few fights he had with TKO Promotions. But I have to tell you, even now I'm finding his career monotonous. And Christian Mahar is a very good little operator, with the emphasis on little. He's really a 15 to 18 pounder. He was simply oversized, a little bit too aged, couldn't keep him off him. I think the time is now. They built up Leo Santa Cruz's record. They did a brilliant job, Golden Boy, of getting him some titles, raising his popularity, and really building a career. But I think the time is now that he has to face someone younger in their prime that is considered a marquee 22 pounder. And I would hope that all this talk of a guy like Carl Frampton or Scott Quigg, two very good fighters from the UK, I hope there is some validity to this talk.
Yeah, I do too. I was starting to want to call him Leo Santa Cruz Control, because it's like they've hit the button and it's just like, and bring in a guy with 7 losses and bring in another guy with like 5 losses. And really, you know, I was watching him, and not to denigrate the kid too much because he's still developing, but watching him, he's like, he's to brawlers what Rigo is to boxers. I know I'm going 12 rounds. Yeah, it's going to be kind of a prototype of what that should be, but I don't find it very interesting after a while. It's kind of monotonous. It's not very fun to watch. I don't think that his power really translated to the new weight, and he's not really putting out the energy level to really get things done. There's like a – they used to talk about him as a mini Margarito, but he's nowhere near as ferocious or just kind of – plain mean the way that Margarito was when the bell rings. I don't know what they do with him at this point. Dave Duenas, you know, Leaving in the Ring, suggested Donaire versus Santa Cruz. Darchinian versus Santa Cruz. A guy that would challenge and that would have some power and some experience would be kind of interesting to see him in against. But, yeah, they need to step him up to some sort of name or some sort of – because to think of him as a 2-time champion – it's kind of hard to believe. I think of him as a prospect that's had a couple belts. I'd like to see him step up and fight somebody that's going to give him some resistance, at least.
Yeah. Gabe, Jorge Linares, is he a lightweight version of Amir Khan? Incredibly gifted but fatally flawed, because even when he dominates, when he gets touched at all, you hold your breath. I mean, I've always said about a guy like him, he has breathtaking talent, but because of his lack of punch resistance, you also hold your breath. And I've described Amir Khan as a flying Walenda. You know, these guys can do these great things up in the air on tight ropes. They can go 100 yards, but a stiff breeze comes from the wrong direction. All of a sudden, they fall and they're dead. That pretty much sums up Jorge Linares, doesn't it?
He's kind of like a tiny Amir Khan. You know, you look at him, and they've got all the speed. They've got all the punches. Everything looks great. And then somebody hits them or gives them resistance, and then they kind of shake or they bend until they break. It's a strange thing to watch, but, you know, that kind of makes him that much more exciting. What I find interesting about Linares is they kind of keep recycling him and keep bringing him back, even though he has the setbacks. But, you know, I think, you know, he's probably in line for, you know, a title shot here and pretty soon. But I've always said, you know, guys like, I'm booking my trip right now for Canastota to see Tito go into the Hall of Fame and go cover Cotto Martinez. And Tito was always so great to me because he was fragile and ferocious. You know, Linares is missing that one-punch knockout power that makes him complete, but he's got everything else, including fragility, which will make him exciting. So I'm all for more fights with him.
You know, Jorge Linares, to me, can beat anyone on any given day, but as he showed against Yeo Thompson, he could lose on any given day, and that's what makes him so very dramatic. And like you said, this is a fight. The Arakawa fight was a WBC eliminator, and the title holder was Omar Figueroa, who had to drop out of this card. I can absolutely envision a scenario for the first 7-8 rounds where Linares looks brilliant. He's boxing his ears off. He's throwing these fast, flashy combinations, looking like $1 million. Then all of a sudden, Omar Figueroa accidentally hits him, and it just shatters into 1,000,000 pieces. That is the intrigue of a potential fight with Linares and Arakawa. Gabe, this pay-per-view card, we have to talk about this story, because it really kind of showed you what was going on. It was almost like a cursed card. But Carlos Molina was supposed to defend his junior middleweight title against Jermall Charlo. Then word got on Friday, or actually Thursday, that he had some arrest warrants or he didn't register as a sex offender. Then all of a sudden it became a immigration issue. Now, Gabe, this is one of the secrets of the game that had kind of been known by people in the industry. But Carlos Molina, for a while, has been illegal. And I know for a fact he was not able to fly because of the TSA issues, and post 9/11, the world has certainly changed in a lot of ways. Gabe, I don't think I'm going overboard when I say that I think, at least in terms of fighting in the States, I think Carlos Molina's career is over.
Yeah. I mean, we saw what happened with Angulo when his visa issues kind of tied him up, and it's kind of sad to watch him in that fight with Canelo and think that probably the rest of him might have been left in ICE detention, or in that period where he was waiting to find out if he could fight again, then fought in Mexicali. I think Carlos Molina, you know, it's interesting timing that he's a guy that needs a belt in order to get on TV, in order to matter and get in big fights. And right before a big pay-per-view fight, boom, he has immigration issues and goes in. It's kind of a strange situation. But, you know, at the same time, coming to this country, I'm a son of immigrants. You got to mind your P's and Q's. You got to handle it the right way. You can't depend on anybody in boxing to take care of your visa, that's for sure. Ask Alfredo Angulo how that worked out for him. Being here is a privilege. It's not a right if you're not born here. So it's kind of all on him in a sense.
Moving on to round number 2, Gabe, it's showtime from Puerto Rico, and for the WBA WBC Junior Welterweight title, we have Danny Swift Garcia making his return to the ring. His 2014 debut is against the tough Mauricio Herrera. Also, semi-main heavyweights in action, Deontay Wilder takes on Malik Scott, and in a super featherweight feature, talk about being at the crossroads. Juanma Lopez takes on Daniel Ponce de Leon. Gabe, I'll say this about Mauricio Herrera, whether he's fighting Ruslan Provodnikov, whether he's fighting Mike Alvarado or anyone else. He's one of those guys, he may not be great, but it takes a pretty damn good fighter to beat him. I get the sense he's just not going to lay down. I think Danny Garcia wins the fight, but I certainly don't think it's a blowout either.
No, he's a cagey vet, you know, Mauricio Herrera. He's a guy that knows how to do all those little gray area things of grabbing you the right way and smothering your punches to hitting you in the right spots where the ref's not looking. He doesn't have a lot of knockouts. He's got like 7 knockouts in 23 fights. The 3 losses, he's all gone the distance, you know, and with quality people. Took Kareem Mayfield, Mike Alvarado the distance. Had a loss to Mike Anchondo, a split decision early on in his career. He's a guy that's been in with quality people. And, you know, he went the distance with Ruslan Provodnikov. That says a lot about his chin and his durability. This is a tough fight, you know, and it's a kind of fight that Danny, who's looking for some shine, and I know he feels he's been overlooked by the media despite having a very good resume and doing all the – and winning the fights that we didn't think he was going to win and doing it in exciting fashion. This is a kind of fight that you may not look very good in. It is kind of interesting to take him to the island and put him in with something of a spoiler in terms of excitement in Mauricio Herrera.
Gabe, Deontay Wilder has had about 30-some-odd fights, and I can make an argument or make the statement, this might be his first real fight. I can never get it out of my mind when a journeyman by the name of Harold Sconyers about 3-4 years ago at the Fantasy Springs just hit him on the chin and dumped him to the canvas hard. And I believe it was at that point that his management said, hold on, let's pump the brakes here. Let's go as slow as possible. Gabe, in your opinion, forget the number of fights or the quantity or the quality of knockouts. Is he ready to handle a slick, technically sound veteran like Malik King Scott?
Well, we're going to find out. I don't know, man. I think that's a million-dollar question. I think it's a very, very interesting fight. I don't know if Malik's the kind of guy who doesn't have a lot of power, but he can hit you sharply, hit you with a shot that you may not be expecting and catch you. I think that's what Deontay has to really worry about in this fight. I think if Malik is able to kind of weather the early storm, and we're going to find out just what this guy can do, what Deontay Wilder can do. He hasn't gone many rounds. I think the deepest he's gone is 4. He's been scheduled for more, but guys don't last that long. But, yeah, I mean, it's a huge jump in class from Firtha and the ghost of Sergey Ljakovic and even Audley Harrison to Malik Scott, even despite being stopped by Derek Chisora. I think this is a really dangerous fight for Deontay Wilder. I was talking with Glaskov today, and I asked him about heading into the Adamant fight. Was that a significant fight, fighting Malik Scott? What did you learn, and can you carry that into it? And he went on for quite a little while about it, what he learned and all the tricks that a guy like Malik Scott could teach him, through the course of their 10 rounds together. It's a great fight. I'm really excited for it.
Gabe, I may regret this, but you know what? I'm looking at the menu. I'm looking at the price here, and I may be going with my heart, but order me up an upset special. I am going with Malik Scott. I think he's going to box early, and I think he's going to layer his attack, layer the fight, and I think in the second half he's going to begin to come forward in a sneaky fashion. And like you said, he's not a hard puncher, but he's sneaky. But I've always said he has the slickest, most educated left hand in the game. He has a very, very good front side with that jab. The question is he willing to do a little bit more than that? And I do think having Joe Goosen back in his corner, I think that's an intangible. I think the key is he's got to get out of the first 4 rounds relatively unscathed. So I'm going to go with the upset special here. And, Gabe, Juanma Lopez, I was actually in attendance 4 or 5 years ago on a Kelly Pavlik-Gary Lockett undercard in Atlantic City when Daniel Ponce de Leon was the defending WBO 22-pound champion, and he lost his belt in about 60 seconds to Juanma Lopez, who looked at that point was going to be the next great Puerto Rican star. Fast forward to 2014, and I think it's amazing that I think Ponce de Leon is actually the favorite in this fight.
Yeah, it's what a trippy fight this is, and it's always strange to me looking at, Mike Conchando, Edwin Valero, and Daniel Ponce de Leon. Both came out of the same gym, Maywood, and he's like the most raw out of the three. Valero was a beautiful boxer, great power. Chondo, great boxer. Ponce de Leon, he's got tremendous power and resilience, but, he's very raw, and then he has that stoppage loss. But here he is at 33, still rolling along. And he's got a hell of a chance to win this fight. Juanma, it's pretty rare to see a guy fall off so fast and so far down the hill. I actually favor De Leon in this fight, particularly if he gets it past the first 3-4 rounds and gets it into where they're both a little bit tired and it's about timing.
The one thing I respect about Daniel Ponce de Leon, he's not exactly Roy Hobbs. No one's going to call him the natural. And I remember being at the 2000 Olympics and seeing guys like Jermaine Taylor, Jeff Lacy, Samuel Peter, obviously Miguel Cotto, Ivan Calderon, Francisco Bojado. And I remember thinking to myself, Ponce de Leon might be a journeyman at best. And for him to put up the type of career he has is really a testament to his stick-to-itiveness and his work ethic. And I get the sense that while Ponce de Leon is certainly past his physical prime, I think Juanma might be shot. And there's a reason why Top Rank basically dropped him right after the Mikey Garcia fight, because it looks like he can no longer take a punch. They're both fairly heavy-handed. Get the sense Ponce de Leon has his faculties in order just a little bit more. I like Ponce de Leon to win this fight. All right, let's hit the phone lines. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and we'll go through some of your tweets. You could tweet us at Gabriel_Montoya, at Steve Max Boxing, and at Max Boxing Live. Gabe, let's get to the calls.
In 760, you're live on the next round. 760.
Yes, oh, who is this?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Julio from San Diego.
Julio from the city of the San Diego Padres. How you doing?
I'm good, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you. My first question to you is, I'm seeing Amir Khan is looking about facing Luis Collazo, and I was wondering, I want to get your guys' opinion. You think that from all the stuff this guy was talking and trying to just get a Mayweather fight without fighting that welterweight, do you think that's a good fight for him? Like, do you think that warrants him the fight that he wants so bad?
Well, let me go first here. And Gabe, you talk to Amir Khan much more than I do. I actually think if you're going to fight a Luis Collazo, I think there's a bit of a risk there because Luis is a slick southpaw. He's very technically sound. He's got new life. But just beating Luis Collazo a year after beating Julio Diaz, I'm still not seeing a resume where I say to myself, hey, I want that guy to fight Floyd Mayweather in September. I think if you beat Luis Collazo, I think you have to follow that up with another win later this year of more quality. And then I think next year you're in the running. Gabe?
Yeah, I mean, and you have to think, you know, Amir, unless Golden Boy says, you know what, Floyd, why don't you fight at the end of the year, take a little rest. Canelo, you fight September on pay-per-view. And they kind of move things around. Amir is not going to be that September opponent because of Ramadan. It takes him a month to get his body back to normal and then even get back into training. So he's not even up for next. As far as the opponent, I would actually be kind of impressed, and I would actually lean towards Collazo a bit in that fight. But I'd be impressed if Amir could get past a technician, regardless if he's a southpaw. I mean, even more so, because it's a harder style to deal with. It doesn't set him up for Floyd, but I think it's a quality win at 47. But like Steve said, he would have to come back with something maybe on the undercard of if Floyd did a December card, let's say, or late November, he'd be on the undercard of that to set up being ready for a May fight with Floyd next year. But Collazo, if I'm looking to dip my toe at 47 and I'm Khan, that's not the guy I look for personally.
And by the way, guys, there were some rumors of Amir Khan, Robert Guerrero. I asked Richard Schaefer this weekend if there's any truth to that. He informed me there wasn't because Robert Guerrero, who literally has disappeared like the ghost, is still in some sort of litigation with Golden Boy. So don't put any stock into those rumors as of this moment.
Damn, I like that fight too. But I had one more question, guys. What do you see Thurman next?
Well, Keith Thurman either is going to be on April 26th or May 3rd. There were some reports last week that there could be a Showtime doubleheader at the StubHub Center in Carson where Lucas Matisse takes on Tom Bob Anderson, and so does Keith Thurman. And I think Abner Mares, if he doesn't take on Tak Miura, as was originally planned at 130 pounds, I think that might be a triple header. But I think that's one of the drawbacks, Gabe, of this whole Golden Boy Heyman logjam, is that you have a lot of solid fighters here, but as of this moment, you don't have a lot of set plans, and I think that's one of the drawbacks of what's going over there on that side of the street.
Yeah, and Keith Thurman is a guy that I want to see fighting, you know, often and in big fights. I think he's a heck of a talent, and I think he's a star in the making. He's incredibly quotable, seems like a really cool guy, and he's got a fan-friendly style. He's a little bit vulnerable, but he tends to come on late in a really unusual style. And I know Richard Schaefer is trying to sell us that Marcos Maidana is a young Manny Pacquiao, but if I'm going to look at a guy that's going to be a dynamic puncher who can knock you out while on the move, that's a little bit vulnerable as a next kind of Manny Pacquiao type, to me it's kind of more of a Keith Thurman.
Mm-hmm. Julio, anything else?
That's it, fellas. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much. Again, if you want to call in, a phone line is opened up, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
707, you're live on the next round. 707. And we have our first knockdown of the night. And it's always reliable, the 954, you're live on the next round.
Yo, what's going on, fellas?
Is this the Gator?
You got it.
All right, what's going on, Sean?
Come on, man. Who, I'm your most reliable listener. Who are you,
you are. You're like the sun coming up.
You are.
Yeah. Oh. Steve, what the hell are you talking about? Malik Scott?
Like I said, I may come to regret this, but this is why you call it an upset special. Now, hold on. I didn't realize he was facing Larry Holmes or Ernie Shavers. He's fighting Deontay Wilder, one of the most unproven 32-0 records in the history of the sport. Capiche?
Yeah, but we gotta look at history here. History. Malik Scott is vulnerable to the windmill punchers. Look what Derek Chisora did to him. Deontay is going to windmill his ass into the ground.
Sean, I think early on this fight is very, very dangerous for Malik Scott. There's no doubt about it. He does not have what I'd call a straight right cross. He does have a bit of a Tim Witherspoon-esque right hand. The punching trajectory, I think Malik Scott's going to have to get used to. But I'm just making an educated guess that I think if he gets the fight into the middle rounds and eventually into the deep waters, I think his experience can show. But again, that's why we call it an upset special.
Well, and here, also, these guys have worked together. And I remember it was probably three
yes,
fights
they have.
Back. This was back when I was still in L.A., and I was talking with somebody that was connected to the camp, and they were talking about how Malik was just getting to the point where he was learning how to just box a whole sparring session instead of just going all out and going crazy. He was just calming down and just boxing the guy, using the jab, mixing in something here and there, but just trying to win the round. And the guy he was learning to do that with was Malik Scott. So I really wonder what those sessions, how much they're going to play into this. And is it that thing of, I taught you everything you know, but I haven't taught you everything I know. And,
uh-huh.
and will that even matter? It's an intriguing fight, man, very much so.
Sean, did you enjoy the pay-per-view show on your radio broadcast this past weekend?
You know what, man? First of all, I didn't get to listen to it over the, quote, radio. my laptop broke, and I couldn't find any, quote, radio stations on my iPad that was streamed. So for the first time in my life, I just followed it on Twitter while it was happening, and I can't even tell you how many different people made the goddamn the dog is taking a beating call animal services tweet. It was kind of nauseating. But from what I saw the highlights, and Canelo's hand speed looked pretty good, I thought. You know, I mean, like I said, I didn't see the whole fight. But, what do people expect? You know, it's Angulo. He's just going to come forward and block with his face. So,
Sean,
I don't know, man.
I've always said, there's a stereotype of fighters of a certain complexion, whether it's George Groves and in this case Angulo, that it's like football. The white wide receiver always has deceptive speed or he's sneaky fast. I've always said, don't judge a guy by Mayweather because you can't do that. That's like saying you're slow in comparison to Usain Bolt. But if you look at Canelo, even against Austin Trout, there were times I thought he made Austin Trout miss a lot. I thought he countered him well. I think Saul Alvarez, over the period of time, is going to win people over. He's only 23 years old, and guys, call me nuts. And Sean just did it a couple minutes ago. Right now, if they fought, I think Canelo Alvarez beats Arizlande Lara.
I agree.
I would agree with that. I think he's a boxer, and I think people criticize Canelo. I criticize him a bit in that he wasn't more aggressive with Floyd, but from the very beginning, which is why I never gave him a chance to win and only gave him a draw because of the business, we knew this about him. He's kind of a natural boxer, counterpuncher. He's not an aggressive Mexican dude. And so when it came time to face somebody that he was expected to be, like a brawler like Angulo, it was just a perfect match for him. He kept it in the center of the ring. He's very poised. Like you said, he's 23 years old. If you're building the next great Mexican superstar, and the bar is Chavez Sr., then he's in a great position. The amount of fights he's got and the age he is, the fan base he's got, this is a guy that's going to be around for a very, very long time if they develop him right and give him the right fights. And I don't see a lot of guys that I would say would beat him. You couldn't really point out too many. I mean, I think the guys would challenge him. Kirkland Canelo would be a hell of a fight. I'd probably lean right now a little bit towards Canelo in it, though, just based on consistency.
I think at 54, taking away Floyd Mayweather, who only makes part-time money grabs up there, I think Canelo's greatest challenges will be if and when he moves up to 160. Anything else, Sean?
Yeah, just a couple more quick things, guys. Canelo looks so good, and he's so young. He's got so much longer. You know, he's got the whole, he's got basically his whole career ahead of him still. I mean, are they just planning on making him, like, a pay-per-view fighter for the rest of his career? Because I mean, that's just a little bit ridiculous, don't you think? I mean, even for like a tune-up fight like Angulo, I mean, what the hell? There's only so many marquee names that you can have pay-per-views with every year. You know what I mean?
Sean, I wrote an article on it last week talking about this very issue, and I just wonder, are the contractual obligations that Golden Boy made to retain the services of Canelo necessitating this? But you're right. If you go through the history of your true pay-per-view franchises who are able to do millions of buys and do hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue, from Mike Tyson to Evander Holyfield to De La Hoya to Manny Pacquiao to Floyd Mayweather, these guys had to build a certain base either on network TV or on HBO, and then they slowly went into pay-per-view full-time, and they certainly didn't do it at the age of 23. So, Sean, what you say is absolutely valid and I think very, very problematic.
I mean, even the Golden Boy, you know, would have off fights on HBO and stuff like that.
Yes, he would.
It's not like it was pay-per-view for him every time. And, guys, I know you probably got a lot of callers, so I just want to get my last point across here. I want to say that I'm an enormous Abner Mares fan, and yeah, I've been following him pretty much since I started watching boxing like 4 or 5 years ago. And, man, he what the hell is going on with him? It's like every time I see an interview with him or a news update, it's like he wants to move up. He doesn't want to move up. He doesn't know about these negotiations. He got knocked the F out. I mean, what's the matter with this kid? I thought he's a competitor. Why doesn't he go and handle Johnny Gonzalez like I think he really could? You know, what's going on here?
Let me just say this. I think his own management and his team would like to know that exact same question. He's been waffling more than Lego my ego. He's acted very funny since that left hook hit him on the chin back in late August, and he's gone from enforcing the rematch immediately, wanting to do it in December, then pulling out of a fight in February, then getting out of the rematch completely, committing early on to May 3rd. Now he says he wants a tune-up. Sean, I think he's getting a lot of internal pressure to maybe switch managers, and I think he's a confused individual right now. That's my take on it.
It's hard for me to believe he's afraid. I mean, he's basically fought a murderer's row of contenders, you know, the last couple of years in his career. Is this political? I mean, is it really all coming down to Frank Espinoza management?
You know, if Frank Espinoza had his way, they would have fought February 15th, or he'd be fighting May 3rd. I think that there are external pressures that are tearing Abner Mares apart. And the one thing that I've always respected about Abner, Sean, is like you pointed out, he acted like a fighter, okay? The last couple of months, has he done that?
No, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, it's like he's acting like a little prima donna. Get back in the ring, you little Mexican. We love you in there, not you in interviews.
And Sean, you say that with love, though. You say that with love.
Of course. I'm not racist. I love everyone.
All right. Well, Sean, we got to get going, okay?
Keep it real, guys.
All right. Let's go to a couple of tweets here. Here's from our good friend Javier Gorbet, and you could just visualize his voice or hear it as I read this tweet. Any update on whether Garcia versus Gamboa will be made, or is that fight going to Bolivian? Gabe, the inside info I'm given is that fight is going to Bolivian. Bottom line, Mikey Garcia wants an X number. HBO or Top Rank could not come to that number, and they could not work out a compromise. So, quite honestly, I don't know what's going to be next with Mikey Garcia and Gamboa. Who knows? He makes his yearly appearance, I'm sure, one of these days. But if I was a gambling man, which I'm not, I would not bet on that fight. With Cotto Martinez in June and Carlos Molina jailed, is Lara the only option for Canelo's July fight? Gabe, judging by some of the comments and what happened at the post-fight press conference, I get the sense Canelo right now, not saying he's afraid, but I think Lara is not at the front of the line.
No, I think they're going to be looking for somebody that's not Arislandi Lara. We don't need a technician who's a boxer who's not going to go away and who's got an axe to grind. I mean, and he's got some athleticism and speed. I think, as we sit here and say, he's got really functional speed. Let's see Canelo deal with a guy that has some speed again. You know, it would be an interesting fight. I'd like to see it, but, you know, I get the sense that they'd rather face anybody else. Maybe, you know, look for Vonis Martirosyan or somebody that they can kind of job out and bring in. You know, what, I don't know, what would you not want to see him face?
Yeah, that's a good question, but here's the issue for Mikey Garcia. Before the last fight with Burgos, the storyline is, we all kind of talked about it, we all wrote about it, was that he's on a fast track to face Manny Pacquiao, right? Even though he's like four weight divisions below him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he had a decent win over a pretty good fighter in Burgos. He did what he was supposed to. But he needs that eye-opening victory over a somewhat big, recognizable name. And Gamboa, for as underachieving and as disappointing it is, if he wrecks him within, let's say, 7-8 rounds or chases him down, that is an impressive feather to take someone zero
sure.
that had been so highly touted before. And I think one thing that Mikey Garcia and his team don't like, and I've heard this, is that they're almost being force-fed this fight at a certain price by HBO and Top Rank, and they're saying, wait a minute, if we're the future or one of the pillars of your company and this network, why are you only giving us one option instead of a second or third? There are some interesting things going on with Mikey Garcia. He was at the fight this past weekend, and who knows, is he talking to Richard Schaefer? Is he talking to Al Haymon? We don't know, but he was certainly there at the fight this past weekend. Gabe, here's a tweet from Larry Bird. Nice of Larry Legend to join us. Will we see Felix Verdejo on the Cotto Martinez undercard? Any idea what fights will be on that undercard in general? I'm not sure about that because Verdejo is Puerto Rican, but he's not a Cotto Promotions guy, and there are some political things going on there. As for the undercard, Gabe, what I've heard is that Samson Lekowitz, his company, gets an undercard fight. I think that's going to be Javier Fortuna. Lou DiBella mm-hmm. gets an undercard slot, and I think so does Miguel Cotto. So if this is a horrible undercard, you know one thing you can't do for once? Blame Bob Arum.
Anything with Javier Fortuna in it is going to be exciting. So at least that's two good fights. Hopefully he gets an opponent that's worth it, you know, and not like a Tom Bob Anderson special, but somebody that's going to give me some action and make it worth it for me to head out there. Because I want to see a fight at the Garden, and definitely this is the one to be at. I mean, this atmosphere, I cannot wait to see this fight.
Here's one from Norms, who came back in from Cheers. My question is, what exactly does Leonard Ellerbe do? How is it different than Al Haymon? Leonard Ellerbe is basically works for Floyd Mayweather. Whatever he needs to do in terms of what TMT is, Mayweather Promotions. But Al Haymon is a real shot caller. Whether you hate him or love him, whether you think he's the worst thing in the world for boxing or the greatest thing in the world for his clients, Al Haymon calls the shots, while Leonard Ellerbe has a well-paying gig as Mayweather's employee. Would you agree with that, Gabe?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. One guy runs the universe. One guy runs wherever Floyd asks him to at any moment's notice.
Oh, wow. Okay. That comment was from Gabriel Montoya, and you could tweet him at Gabriel _Montoya, at Steve Max Boxing, at Max Boxing Live. You're listening to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
In 858, you're live on the next round. You've been waiting a while. 858.
How are you guys doing?
Good. Who is
Hello.
This?
Hello. How are you?
This is Tyler from San Diego, or also known as the Whale's Vagina.
Oh, well, you know what? Welcome from the Whale's Vagina.
Anchorman reference.
Okay.
Just going back to the fight, the Canelo fight, I had heard, and I don't know if you guys had heard, that Angulo had been having some sort of food poisoning before the fight, that he had some sort of, like, diarrhea or something like that. That kind of, like, to me, kind of would explain a little bit of his performance, because he was just so not there. He just looked, I don't know, if you guys heard anything like that.
Well, let me just say this. You know, when a guy performs or underperforms to the degree that Angulo did, you're going to hear a lot of conspiracy theories and everyone becomes Oliver Stone. But Gabe and I have it on pretty good information. I think there were things that happened weeks before where I think he was mistrained by Virgil Hunter that led to that performance. Because I got to tell you, and again, I know styles make fights, but Gabe, and I know the limitations of Angulo physically, but that was not the same guy that we saw nearly chase Erivandi Lara off a cliff.
No, you know, and watching like the All Access, like I'm there for a couple of the Remy Korshchemny sessions, and I watched Angulo, and he seemed low energy. Later on in camp, they kind of analyzed his blood and everything, and they found he was dehydrated, and that was something he and I had talked about. And he was like, you know, now I'm starting to feel better. You could see the energy level start to pick up, I guess, but from what I understand, people talked about how good he was sparring. But when I watched the footage of All Access, and you could see him with the sprint training, but then you see him in the gym, and he's wearing, like, this weighted vest. And to me, it's like I think it was people – there wasn't a unified mind, and the protocols all weren't followed because there wasn't a unified – this is how we're going to approach it. It was like they threw everything with the kitchen sink, and I just don't think when you're starting to do more scientific-level training and more high-exertion stuff outside the normal realm of boxing training, you run the risk of having that kind of performance. And I think that was a big part of it, but I really think that all that buildup, everything happened, and like 6 seconds in, Angulo got caught right on the chin with a hard left hook, and he got shook. And he got beat up for the next 3 minutes, and he never really recovered. I really – sometimes fights are just that simple. He's also super slow. He's always been super slow, you know. He did come out late, so he was obviously in decent shape, and he didn't seem to really be exhausted. He just – he wasn't able to be the stronger man and get Canelo to the ropes and maul him the way – Carlos Molina did the same thing to Lara that Angulo did, getting into the ropes and mauling him. Angulo just seemed to take more advantage than Molina did. In this case, Canelo never let it be that kind of fight. He kept it offensive, but at long range, and Angulo could never do anything about it.
By the way, I didn't ask for a caller this. Are you babysitting right now?
I'm at the pool with my kids right now. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I hope they're enjoying the show.
Okay. Well, I just have one more thing to ask you. Steve, going back to the Cotto thing, when they didn't know if he was going to fight Canelo or if he was going to fight Martinez, and then you were saying HBO, they better have signed with him or else they're going to have a lot of explaining to do. What happened with that? Like, did HBO end up signing some deal with him or something like that? So
here's what I think happened. From what I'm told, what was offered to him by Golden Boy to face Canelo, that supposed – eight-figure offer was matched. He is getting right around that amount for June 7th. I think the wild card, I don't think people understood the importance of his relationship with Todd DeBuff. I wrote a story for it on Sports on Earth and other websites. When it was all said and done, I do think that Cotto felt a little bit more secure with Top Rank, and specifically Todd DeBuff, and the way they can run a promotion and the fact he'd be protected. Now, I also believe that his loss to Austin Trout, a fight that I thought was very puzzling on his end, why would you make that fight in the Garden, I think kind of opened his eyes as to say, you know what, while I'm the only guy in the ring, being a boxing franchise took a lot of work and it was teamwork. And I think all those factors, but again, the underlying factor, in my opinion, was the relationship between Miguel Cotto and Todd DeBuff. I think there was a certain security, there's a certain trust, and there's a certain friendship that when it was all said and done, I think that was the tiebreaker.
So basically, Cotto saved HBO's ass by being loyal, is what you're saying.
Right, or you could say basically maybe Todd DeBuff saved HBO's ass, yes.
All right, thank you guys. Have a good day.
All right, thank you. Tell your kids we said hello. They sound like they're having a great time. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck?
In the 412, you're live on the next round. 412.
Hey. How you doing? This is Daniel from Pittsburgh.
Daniel from the Steel City. Welcome aboard.
Hey, I was thinking about Canelo here with the weight issue. Is his next move, next fight, going to be 160? And if it's 154, whoever his opponent is, do they have a – I mean, do you trust him to make weight next time?
Mm.
Or you just say, give me the 100,000 now?
You know, that's a great question. If I'm a junior middleweight with any leverage, I would just start putting in some really heavy punitive penalty clauses and try to make it work. I think one of the issues, though, with the politics of the business, right now at 154, you're okay if you're Canelo. You're the guy. But at 160, Gabe, am I not mistaken, but aren't all the marquee fights at middleweight at HBO right now?
Well, there's always Peter Quillen's belt.
Like I said, aren't all the marquee fights at HBO right now?
Well, do you think he waits until the Cotto Martinez fight, hoping Cotto wins and gets a shot with him?
Richard Schaefer sure seems to think so, but I think it's going to be interesting, in my opinion, what this pay-per-view did. Let's say they hit 300,000 to 400. That'd be a success based on what everyone was paid. They probably turned a profit, and they think to themselves, okay, we got ourselves a franchise now. But if Miguel Cotto and Sergio Martinez, if the early reaction that we've gotten to this promotion from the press conferences to the Twitter feed where people are going nuts wanting to get tickets early on, let's say that pay-per-view does 550 to 600. Well, Miguel Cotto will say, fine, Canelo, I will fight you, but on my network. And then again, what do we run into? Cold War issues.
Plus, you also get to think, what if Cotto Martinez is a classic? What if they're just old enough to be great for each other? We get a rematch, and you know, this becomes a little bit of a franchise itself, you know, and a gold watch for both of those guys. That could change the landscape as well. I mean, that's a competitive fight, Cotto Martinez. It's not a gimme for either guy, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of intrigue here.
I agree. One more question for you guys. It's been heavily reported, Steve mentioned it last week. Golovkin, Chavez Jr. in July. To me, that sounds like a mistake to have it so early. One, it's the summertime, bad time of year for boxing usually. And also, that's, what, 5 pay-per-views in 5 straight months? And Chavez, he's not, I mean, I'm not Mexican, but, I mean, he only drew, what, 6 or 7,000 last time? He's still in the doghouse, according to Mexican fans. So it's not like he's must-see to them.
You know why I think they're doing it, though? Just for that reason. I think everyone involved, from Top Rank to Zanford Promotions and even HBO, they are now saying if we're having a point of diminishing returns, which it certainly is, because what you said was correct based on the attendance and literally doing half the numbers they did when they fought Marco Antonio Rubio 2 years ago in the very same venue, now they're saying, I don't know if it's they're either cashing out or rolling the dice or both. From HBO's perspective, we need Golovkin to have that marquee event. We need a guy that can move the needle for him. Well, that's Chavez Jr. And the Chavez Jr. camp says, wait a minute, Golovkin's really a 154-pounder if you want it to be, and we have a significant advantage in size. So they're saying to themselves, Top Rank, you know what? If this kid's becoming too much of a headache and there's too many issues, let's see what he really has. The babysitting and the coddling is over. Let's make this fight.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you taking my call. You guys have a good night.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, real quickly, a couple of news and notes here on NBC Sports Network this Saturday night from the Sands Casino in Bethlehem, PA. Thomas Adamek takes on Jar Glasgow, a fight that was supposed to take place November 16th. Gabe, I'm tempted to pick Glasgow based on age, youth, and the fact that Thomas Adamek, I think, has gone backwards physically the last couple of years. What are your thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Glasgow as well for all the same reasons. I just think, and you factor in that Malik Scott fight. He's had success since then, but I could tell just by, we only had like 2 questions to ask because that was my only one to him. He just lit up, you know, and all the other answers seemed kind of short and a little bit rote. But when I said, you know, what did you learn out of that? It was like, oh, man, we've been watching that tape. And, you know, there was a lot that we could learn in there. I found mistakes that I've been making over the years, and we've worked to correct them. And I think he's had a long look at Tomash. They've sparred together as well. It's kind of a back and forth about how that went and how much that matters. But I think it's Glasgow's time. You know, heavyweights kind of mature late. He turned pro at, you know, at like 24, and he's 29 now. So I think he's got the right seasoning, and he's getting Tomash at the right time. And I think he's the one to emerge. Probably, I would say, a decision win, unless he really steps it up and has the conditioning to put it on Tomash late. Then we can get an on-the-rope stoppage.
Gabe, I got to give you credit. You are Gabe Stradamus here. You said this literally from the time he won the WBO middleweight belt, that Peter Quillen does not have a belt. This is a shield. And on April 19th on Showtime, Washington, D.C., the semi-main, to Bernard Hopkins against Bibet Shumanov, Peter Quillen is fighting Lucas Konechny. And I'll be honest, I'm not even so sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, but Lucas is really a 54-pounder, and not even what I'd ever call an elite one. He was a guy that was good enough to be a contender, fought certain guys, but wow, what a letdown of a fight.
Yeah, Lucas Konechny. I mean, it's just – It sounds like some sort of, you know, you're pulling a Lucas Connect knee, like you're getting your middleweight champion a really soft defense. You know, it's just, wow. It is what it is. I mean, I think there's something about Quilla that they're projecting. Is it a chin? Is it a work ethic? I don't know what it is, but either that or they're just kind of holding that belt for Canelo, and he's like a placeholder champ.
That's a great point. I think this is the Golden Boy / Showtime middleweight belt. They specifically need that belt, so if Floyd wants to move all the way up and make some history, or if Canelo needs a middleweight belt that's really a microwavable title shot, boom, there it is. That's why any talk of Peter Quinn going to the other side of the street is just that, Gabe, talk.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the divisions, 40 to 160, and it is the only division, you know, of those that they've got a toehold in. Everything else, they kind of dominate to a certain extent. And you look at Carlos Molina, that belt's probably going to fall into a Heyman's hand. So it's an interesting thing. I think that Quillen, when he does finally step up, it's going to be the next fight. I think they're going to have him fight Daniel Jacobs. I thought that would be this fight, but Daniel's in support this weekend in Puerto Rico for Danny Garcia. And so I expect him to fight Quillen should he get past the very dangerous Lucas Konechny.
You know, after you fight Gabriel Zada, who's more of a 54-pounder, there's a natural expectation that your next fight, that you move forward. I don't know if Peter Quillen, Kid Chocolate, is doing that. It just seems to me Kid Chocolate, since the time he won the title, has been very, very inactive, even by today's standards. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
In the 787, you're live on the next round. 787.
Guys, I will.
Oh,
Javier.
My God, it's the voice. It is the most distinctive voice in all of radio. Our good friend Javier from Puerto Rico. The stage is yours.
I wasn't going to call today, but.
But call, please.
I got some news regarding the press conference. I was at the press conference today, and I kind of found it interesting after both Cotto and Martinez addressed the media. Verdejo did too. So they basically announced that if he wins his next two fights and he's fighting March 22 in Puerto Rico and then April 19, that he will basically open the pay-per-view.
Okay.
So he will probably be at the June 7th card. And he's also fighting in a color promotions card on March 22. So apparently Top Rank is making some kind of deal with Cotto in order for him to have in on June 7th.
Well, that's good to hear because I think he is the natural heir apparent. If there's someone going to pass the baton as the franchise on the island, I just look at Verdejo and I think of another Felix. And you know which one it is, guys. It's Tito Trinidad. Again, there's a long ways to go. I don't want to crown him yet. I'm going to put away the anointing oil. But I look at Verdejo, and I said, if you were a stock, I'd buy every damn share.
Another thing, guys, regarding Peter Quilling, if they were going to do a fight with someone, and I thought it should have been Danny Jacob, but if you were going to have Lucas Konechny, it would have been better just to do Jermaine Taylor. At least he's very known.
I got to tell you, with some of the stuff that's happened in boxing, shame on anyone that uses Jermaine Taylor right now. I know we could probably win some fights. Gabe, this guy had a brain bleed. Theoretically, he shouldn't even be allowed to fight.
Right. Yeah, and it's not like, you know, Edwin Valero, where he had the brain bleed years before he was a pro in a motorcycle accident. He got that by getting knocked out a lot and then ultimately getting a brain bleed while he was getting knocked out. Like, you're done. Like, there's certain amount of damage that each body can take. You've reached your limit. You're done. I don't understand it. It really is. But I do hear what you're saying. You know, at least give the guy a name. This isn't even – it's like a placeholder fight. It's not a – you can't even call it like a lateral move. I don't know if it's a step back, but it's just like a step zero. I don't know what Quillen's doing. But, you know, maybe the curse I put on him worked. I have no idea.
Javier, anything else we can help you with?
Two more things very quickly. The first one is, you know, Juanma Lopez won fight in a headliner in HBO against Marquez. Now he's fighting in the headliner in Showtime Extreme. I believe that tells you how he had fallen. And the second thing is, what's the latest on Provodnikov, on Provodnikov title defense?
Well, Provodnikov looks like he's going to come back June 14th, but there's still an issue as to who he's going to face. And I'll say it again, the name that I keep hearing is Antonio DeMarco. And Gabe, am I nuts for thinking that's a physical mismatch for as gutty as DeMarco is?
Yeah, that's kind of like almost like Josefito Lopez Canelo, you know? Like, yeah, good fighter, very durable, but not at that weight against that guy, especially since Provodnikov's shown he could fight at 47. That's a brutal fight. I think that state commissions need to kind of look at that fight and even think about, you know, just giving it the rubber stamp. I don't see it.
Okay, guys, thank you.
All right, Javier. Gabe, the big rumor in boxing, I just want to address this soon, is there's some interesting stuff going on in the offices of Golden Boy. What I'm hearing, and I'm not the only one that's heard this, is that there's a conflict going on between Richard Schaefer, who has run the day-to-day operations of that company basically for a full decade, and the guy whose company, Silhouette, is this guy who basically started the company based on his boxing prowess and the name brand of Oscar De La Hoya. And what I'm hearing is that Oscar wants back in. He wants a little bit more control, and he wants to change the direction of the company from more of an Al Haymon company, which it's become more and more of, to more back his company. I find this story to be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, he's been gone for a while, and obviously, you know, he's been handling his disease, which addiction is, and more power to him. I hope he's healthy. I hope he's got it under control. And it sounds like he has, because a big part of, you know, 12 steps is getting your house in order, both on a personal level, but your business. And, you know, a lot of times addicts will talk about once they're, you know, you get a certain amount of sobriety, a few months, and you start to look through your checkbook, and you realize all the damage financially you're doing, and you really see that, like, everything's completely out of control, and you get it back into. And it's not that Oscar's doing that, and you're right. I mean, he is the face of that company. It was built by him, you know, for his exit strategy. And in his absentia, Richard Schaefer's taken over, and he's allowed somebody else, in my opinion, and a lot of people in the industry's opinion, and Al Haymon, to take over the company. The whole thing, from Showtime to Golden Boy, all of that just looks very, very much like it's run by one person. So I think this is a really deep story that's going to take some resolving here. And legally, to see how it's all entangled is going to be very, very interesting.
I was told a couple weeks ago that Oscar was not going to be at the fight this week for Canelo, who theoretically is one of the few really, really golden boys. Okay, he's not with Haymon. And Oscar has a very close relationship, and he looks at him as one of the franchises. Now, he went to his media day in San Diego. It was his first public appearance in months. I was told leading all the way up to last week, Oscar was not going to be there. I got notice late, I think Thursday or Friday night, Oscar was showing up. Okay? Well, I was told, now I was on media row or press row, so I couldn't really see him, that Oscar and Richard did not sit together for much of the fight, and I don't know how symbolic this is, but I guess Leonard Ellerbe was in between them, and I don't think they talked all that much. I heard that there is a conflict there, and they have to go through who's really with who, who's a Haymon guy, who's a Golden Boy guy, and they're going to have to work some issues out here, but I guess Oscar kind of wants control of his company, but a lot of this, you know, we have to be fair about this, and I don't hate Oscar. I look at him as a very good guy. He's been great for boxing. And for the most part, he's a sympathetic figure. But, Gabe, he's also been an absentee owner. And with some of the really public missteps, you know what I'm talking about, to a certain degree, he has been a corporate liability.
He has. You know, there's no question of that. You know, and that it becomes to a point where either he's going to mature. And I think on some of the personal stuff, like, you and I have never really written about that stuff, you know. Even now, we're kind of not just putting it out there and dogging the guy like other media outlets have. Because, you know what, whatever floats your boat, man, whatever gets you through the night, that's none of my business.
Right.
And I know a lot of addicts and recovering addicts, so I have compassion for his addiction. But your business is business, and the company has flourished in his absence. You would have to agree, right? I mean,
It has flourished at least from a branding standpoint, but this all goes back to, are you making money? And is it actually your company? I mean, there are still a lot of fighters out there who you think are with Golden Boy, but they're actually with Al Haymon. And I think now Oscar is starting to question what direction is this company going in, and theoretically, is this company still mine? And we have to understand here, this is a corporation. You have shareholders. You have AEG involved. You have that Mexican investment family. I think the Brenners, they're involved. I think Oscar still holds a lot of the shares. And this is going to come down to, did Richard Schaefer live up to the fiduciary interest as the Golden Boy CEO? And I'm being told things are going on. Now, a lot of things can go on. It could be the status quo. People could just move on from the company, become a part of new companies. I think this story to me, Gabe, as I'm kind of tracking it and talking to people, I think could be every bit as big as HBO basically jettisoning Golden Boy last year.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. And also to add to that, the Ali Act, you know, as all this, like I was saying, you know, how is this entangled? Is Al, you know, a promoter, is he a manager who's acting as a promoter by pulling the strings of Richard Schaefer? You know, who, like you said, who's a Haymon guy? Who's a Golden Boy guy? To what extent can you use somebody else's promotional license? All these questions, I think, are valid ones that need to be asked. And ultimately, who is looking, you know, when you're signing up to be with Al Haymon and he's saying, well, you're also kind of with Golden Boy, like, who's looking out for the fighters in all this? These are all kind of fascinating questions we're going to get answers to, I think, within, would you say, 6 to 8 months, or is it going to be a year-long
thing? I think sooner. I think much sooner. I'm telling you, there was a strange vibe at the press room and at that promotion last week. That's all I'm going to say. It was just a little bit different. And Oscar just kind of snuck into town, made sure his appearance was there. And I think Canelo is as important as any fighter to Golden Boy right now because of his stature. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
And the 917, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good. Who is this?
Hey, this is Jeff in Atlanta.
Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good,
I just want
to
say I actually like Canelo, but I didn't really glean much from his performance. I always liked Angulo too, but I'm kind of always surprised when Angulo does well in his fights. You know, he looks like he's punching through butter, and you know, I like the guy. He's very tough, and I respect him. But I mean, he was pretty much built for Canelo, and you know, I kind of watched the fight on my radio, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, because I mean, come on, dude. I mean, this is like a HBO fight at best. Like when I was a kid, you know, you'd watch a guy like who they throw on pay-per-view, and maybe he got like his butt kicked, and then they put him back on regular HBO so you can watch him rebuild himself, and you know, maybe not feel like an idiot when you pay to watch him fight again, you know. But this fight showed me nothing, you know, and I'm not going to pay to watch a guy develop again, and I still think he could become a really good fighter. But this Angulo win doesn't really teach me anything. And to be honest, like, if he wasn't, like, you know, a good-looking dude who was Mexican, like, you know, when I was a kid growing up watching, like, Trinidad and Vargas and, like, you know, guys like that at 154, I don't think he would have been a story. You know, like, I think either of those guys would have beaten him. Maybe even David Reed would have given a fit and beaten him. So I think he's in a, you know, crappy weight class. And I hope to see him do well, you know, maybe at 160. But at 154, there's nothing for him to prove. And I'm not going to pay to watch him beat up scrubs, you know?
What if he fought Arislandi Lara? Would you say, okay, I'm going to begrudgingly throw down my 55 bones for that?
See, this is where you're getting me, man, because I like Lara, but I think that would just be like a... man, you know what? No, I wouldn't, because I think it would be boring, okay? And, you know, I have better ways to spend my money on a Saturday night than to watch that one. And look, I'm going to pay for Pacquiao's fight. I'm going to pay for Cotto Martinez, okay? So it's not like I'm just a guy who doesn't pay for stuff. But I'm also not a sucker, and I work hard for my money. And to me, like, when I was growing up, and maybe I'm romanticizing it, but, like, I think, like, Lara versus Canelo would have been an HBO-level, like, or Showtime-level fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, Gabe, there was a time, and again, like you said, I don't want to be that romantic who lives in the black-and-white era. There was a time when Trinidad Pernell Whitaker was on HBO. And I know budgets have changed, but I think it's very dangerous when you lower the bar of what is a pay-per-view, what also happens is you lower the bar of your regular cable premium subscription, because when Leo Santa Cruz or Omar Figueroa are not on Showtime, it means you're probably having to pay for them on undercard. So it does have a ripple effect.
Well, and also the guys aren't as hungry. I mean, you know, if this was like, you know, like Lara Canelo almost would be like a, they're not even the same caliber, but like a Trinidad versus Obakar, you know? I think Lara's going to be that also-ran guy. But it's two guys fighting to get to the next level, and it's going to be they're going to be fighting a little bit harder. When Canelo is 23 years old, he's already at the pinnacle, and he can fight Angulo on pay-per-view. What is he fighting for at this point? You know, why should he try and really try to put it on a guy and take a risk in a fight? He can fight all the stuff he wants if they keep rewarding him like this. I'm glad I keep hearing more and more people watch this fight on the radio. You know, not to take anything away from the guy's money, but I think that the powers that be and everybody involved should learn a lesson that you can't UFC this and just give us any old thing and put it on pay-per-view and expect us to pay for it.
Jeff, anything else?
Just a couple of things real quick. Funny you mentioned Trinidad Whitaker. I actually went to that fight live in the Garden. It was
ooh.
Awesome.
That,
nice.
By the way, that's the fight where Trinidad really became a star. He was like this very respected belt holder who was completely overshadowed by De La Hoya. But that was the fight where he was really introduced, I think, to the general public. And I believe they sold like 18,000 tickets. I remember thinking to myself, wow, this guy had something. And I think that victory put him square in line to eventually get the De La Hoya fight about a year later.
It makes sense. That was in the era where you could still bring cowbells into the Garden and not like them.
That was pre-9/11, no doubt about it.
Yeah,
that was
very cool. So the last thing I'll leave you guys is you know, the whole Cotto Martinez fight. Like, I'll tell you, like, I'm a Puerto Rican dude. I'm a Cotto homer, but I'm also realistic. Like, I would have, like, I still favor Martinez to win this fight. Like, just as I always have, even when it's like a potential, like, you know, pipeline kind of fight. But I don't think it's going to be a whitewash, and I think, like, a lot of people are kind of, like, writing it off as a Cotto fight. You guys haven't. I mean, you know, I've been listening to you guys. You guys haven't. But I think a lot of guys – I think Cotto has problems, like, outside of, like, Mayweather and Pacquiao. He has problems with maybe guys like a Margarito type who's, like, maybe bigger and can, like, walk him down a bit. But Martinez doesn't have that style, and I think it's going to be, like, a really good fight, and I'm just not going to count Cotto out. Like, I think Martinez has a bad wheel, so you never know, and I think Cotto's got a really good shot.
Gabe?
Yeah, I tend to think it's an interesting fight. I mean, how mobile is Martinez? Can his body be gotten to? I really like the way that Cotto looked against Devin Rodriguez, working with Freddie Roach and kind of being reinvigorated. But how much was that? You know, Delvin Rodriguez is not on the level of Sergio Martinez. But it's an interesting fight because Cotto is so versatile. You know, he can be a brawler, he can be a boxer, he can mix it up. But he really goes to the body nice, and he risks. I think the uppercut of Martinez is going to be a big weapon. I think Cotto's always been a sucker for it. And you know, is the speed and mobility going to be there? And what's Martinez going to be like after such a long layoff and multiple surgeries? It's got so much intrigue. I really like this fight.
I'll just say this. The Sergio Martinez, the one-legged, one-kneed, broken-down guy with maybe shoulder problems that struggled with Martin Murray, that version, again, maybe Miguel Cotto, Delvin Rodriguez is the very definition of boxing's fool's gold. But I got to tell you, I think it's a real fight. I know Cotto is a 3-1 dog, according to what I've read. I tell you what, that's not a bad bet. I'll just say it right now. That is not a bad bet. So anyway, Jeff, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, okay?
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, if you want to call in, you know the number. It's 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
702. You're live on the next round. 702.
Rob Palmer.
Yes, who is this?
It's Rob Palmer. Can you hear me?
Rob, now, let me get this straight. 60,000
okay.
Tickets were sold to Groves Frotch 2. Boxing certainly is not dead in the UK, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine a large amount of those have gone to ticket touts, unfortunately. But, I mean, it still doesn't really – that happens with every major event these days, so it doesn't really take away from the magnitude of the event. I mean, that kind of thing makes me think they should really, it would be nice if they introduced some sort of season ticket program for boxing fans. I mean, if you went to, you know, see four or five Golden Boy shows, you should get the preferential treatment when it comes to Mayweather tickets or something.
Rob,
like that would be nice.
Rob, I've written about this issue at length, and I agree with you, your premise. The problem is the only people in the world that gets preferential treatment as it relates to boxing tickets, unfortunately, are the brokers or what you call in the UK touts. That's the unfortunate reality.
Yeah, that's how it is. My main reason for calling is Canelo came in at 155. I don't know if you guys have already touched on this, but do you think he'll be back at 154 in his next fight, or do you think he'll move up to 160? And then the obvious, it's obviously Quillen would probably be the target, but do you think a Golovkin fight could ever happen?
My personal opinion is Golovkin's next fight, I think they're going to move right to July 12th and Chavez at 168. And I've always said about Golovkin, he could probably make 54 if he really had to. I've always considered him a relatively small middleweight. But again, with the politics of the Cold War, and maybe this changes with, you know, all the stuff going on at Golden Boy, but right now, under the current Cold War conditions, Gabe, can you really realistically imagine a Golovkin-Canelo fight?
No, I just don't see it. I mean, I think Canelo was too valuable to Golden Boy to risk like that.
Yeah.
And going back to our earlier discussion about who owns Golden Boy, who has the rights to Canelo? You know, how long is that contract? Who's going to have him? You know, Al Haymon doesn't have him. That guy,
yet.
In terms of if he goes free agent, what an asset that guy is. Yeah, yet. But, you know, talk about a signing, because if that guy stays stays conscious, you know, if he does, he can have an exciting loss. But as long as he doesn't get knocked out cold, he's going to be viable. And especially if he can keep on winning, period, he's going to be very viable. But, yeah, I don't see them putting him in with Golovkin. I think Golovkin's kind of on an island, and he's going to have to go the Bernard Hopkins route with longevity and look for that marquee win somewhere down the line within the next 2 years. I don't even know if that person has emerged yet, who that will be that will make him a star.
Rob, anything else we can do for you?
I went and saw the pay-per-view at a movie theater, actually, this weekend. That's the first time I've ever done it, and really
Rob,
enjoyed myself.
Rob, I had to ask you this, many people were there for that particular event in the theater?
I'd probably say about 50, and it's funny considering you would think everyone there would have been a hardcore fight fan, but most of them didn't show up until halfway through the Leo Santa Cruz fight, so it wasn't all that different to the actual crowd at the MGM as well. But there was about 50 people in there, and it was fun. I would imagine they fill it up a bit more for a Mayweather fight. I don't know, do Top Rank do the same thing for their pay-per-view?
No,
well?
For some reason they don't do the closed circuit. Rob, how much was your ticket at the theater?
I paid $18, and I would usually pay $11 to see a movie at the same theater. So I figured it's not a bad deal. I probably ended up spending $30 on the night. Usually I would go watch the pay-per-views at a friend's house, or friends would come to me, and you kind of split the cost between you, but nobody was available this weekend, so I just did it myself, and I enjoyed myself. It was a good
Rob, did you sneak? Did you sneak in like a flask or a six pack? Because most theaters do not sell alcohol. That's the only drawback of doing the whole theater thing.
This one did. This one, they put us in one of the theaters that has, you know, all the big leather seats and things like that. So hopefully that's the same deal the next time. Probably do that for the Mayweather. And I was really impressed with. I know we were critical of HBO. Last week, I was impressed with the Showtime punditry. I think maybe it's Andre Ward that I don't like rather than not liking fighters on commentary, because I think Paulie Mullen actually does a fantastic job. And I'd love to see Linares and Thompson get it on again. I thought they performed well and put them two together in a rematch.
That'd be fascinating, because Jorge Linares, again, he is just so tantalizing. And I remember him as a 18-year-old sparring partner giving Manny Pacquiao fits, and veteran observers of the game who are not easily impressed, like Hernando Hernandez's brother, Rudy, who's a tough guy to please, Foley, who was a longtime assistant to Freddie Roach, saying that's the best young fighter we've ever seen, but he's fatally flawed, And even after all these missteps, he's like broke back boxing. I can't quit the guy. But
yeah,
it is what
it
is.
I mean, if they just match him with guys that, I mean, Thompson would probably be the wrong fight to put him in from a matchmaking point of view. But, I mean, Vasquez, Richard Abril, they're not big punchers, so maybe he's got a shot in those fights. But apparently Vasquez is fighting Kevin Mitchell on the Wembley undercard.
Good luck to him. I've always said about Miguel Vasquez, you may not like him, but he's one of the most difficult outs in all of boxing.
I agree. Good show, guys. You're making my
Thank you, Rob. Let's take another call here. Gabe, who's next on deck?
I'd like to see Sergio Thompson get another shot with Linares. I mean, I know he won the first one, but the guy could use a payday. And I'd see the rematch. In the 347, you're live on the next round.
Hello.
347?
And we have another knockdown.
All right. In the 803, you're live on the next round.
What's up?
Yes, who is this?
This is Big D from the 803, man. What's going on?
Good. What can we do
What's
for
up,
you?
What's up, man?
Yeah, man, I've been, I hear y'all talking about how y'all think about the Oscar and Richard Schaefer a little. It seems like they got a little something going. I was wondering, anybody catch that at the little Floyd presser that seemed like he had a little something with either Richard, either Golden Boy and Showtime about, like, them not putting Amir Khan on that on his undercard. You know, he was kind of felt a little salty about that. I noticed that he usually thanks Showtime a hell of a lot, and this time, you know, he didn't even mention that. Like, I want to thank Showtime or Stephen Espino. He didn't even mention that. I kind of felt like it was about them not putting wanting to put Broner and Khan on his undercard like he was suggesting. What do y'all think?
I don't know if that's connected to it, because Mayweather is basically an island unto himself. And, here's the whole issue with Broner. Broner, I guess, might fight John Molina in a fight. I don't think that's all that bad. I actually give them credit, because one thing Molina can do is bang, okay? He has very heavy hands. As for Khan, I'll be honest, Kim. I think we talked about this last week. I would not listen to a word Floyd says, and I don't want to take orders from Floyd after he basically lied to me about May 3rd. I'd say, you know what? Get me on my own damn card.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Khan says that he has his own date. He has his own card or his own contract with Showtime. But I saw Steven Espinoza say to somebody on Twitter that that's not true. So I'd like to find out, get clarification with that situation. I know Amir's back in the UK, I believe, at the moment. I want to see what's going on with him at this point in regards to it. But I thought it was kind of a strange press conference. I don't know, Steve, did you actually go to the press conference?
Oh, I waited for 45 minutes, and I got a nice luncheon. And then when, you know, Floyd didn't show up by 12:45, I said it was time for me to go work out. I mean, let's be honest, Floyd's not exactly giving me exclusive one-on-one access. But I do know this, outside of Richard Schaefer, I didn't see the usual Golden Boy staff there. So they were kind of conspicuous by their absence. And my question is, I know Maidana is a Golden Boy fighter. How much involvement will Golden Boy have in this upcoming Mayweather fight? Because no matter what Floyd says, his last 4 or 5 years, his de facto promoter has been Golden Boy, who has done all the nuts and bolts work leading into the fight.
Right.
So is there anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, let me ask you this last question. I kind of feel like I'm not a fan of, like, no one should be. I'm not a fan of the Cold War situation, but I'm kind of feeling like round one, top rank kind of wiping out Golden Boy out. What do y'all think?
You know, honestly, I thought both of them had decent years. I think in terms of improving their ratings and improving their brand name recognizability, I actually think it was Showtime who made leaps in terms of the ratings last year, if you go by the sheer numbers.
I'm talking about just so far this year.
This year, you know what? Here's the funny thing. I think this year's gotten off to such a slow start where no one has done a lot of shows. I think the first quarter of the year is a draw, Gabe. Looking ahead, though, at their schedules, I agree with the caller. I kind of think the HBO top rank schedule, well, number one, it's set. We know what they're doing, but and if you look at the pay-per-view offerings, I do favor Top Rank and HBO.
Yeah, because just with Pacquiao Pacquiao
Bradley, Cotto Martinez, and Golovkin Chavez.
Yeah, and we only got Showtime only got Floyd and Canelo pay-per-view, and then just with the announcements, not even the fights that done happened, just with the announcement, I feel like I'm just more excited about the top-ranked cards. I mean, just being honest.
Yeah, but, you know, things can change in this business, and I've always said about the Cold War, when people were declaring winners last year, as if this thing was just a one-year spectrum, I've always said this business is very, very cyclical. When I first came in, it was dominated by King and then Arum. Main events almost faded out, and now they're back to being prominent. Gary Shaw had a run. Golden Boy certainly is prominent. Top Rank's gone up and down, but they're always at the top level. I've always said it's very dangerous, and I think foolhardy, to start declaring winners and losers in these things, because this business changes on the fly. I mean, you run into one or two bad nights at the office, and you get hit on the chin with the wrong guy, and all of a sudden your business model changes just like that. So keep that in mind.
Okay, yeah, I never looked at it like that. That's, you're right. That's about right.
All right, well, listen, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
All right, bud.
All right, you guys have a great night. Okay, we have any more calls on the line? We have a few minutes left here.
Yeah, we sure do. Just give me one second. There's actually so many I got to kind of scroll through them for a second. In the 602, you're live on the next round. 602. It might just
hello.
Be
okay, let's go to another
no,
one.
No, just listening.
Okay, well, listen,
all
hope
right.
You're enjoying the show. Let's get to another call, Gabe.
The 951, you're live on the next round. 951.
Okay, I think we're being stuck to a couple listeners. Gabe, let's go through some news and notes before we wrap it up here. Gabe, May 2nd, the night before Mayweather-Madonna, this will be in a venue in Las Vegas. I don't know which one, but I think the show is going to be on Fox Sports. Aaron Londe Lara takes on Ishae Smith. Gabe, maybe I'm underestimating Ishae Smith, but I think this should be a relatively easy night for Lara at the office.
Yeah, I think, you know, Ishae is not the most aggressive guy in the world, and I think he can actually be made to kind of second-guess himself in there. I think Lara is going to do that with his, you know, his footwork, his little feints. He's just overall slicker and sharper right now. And I'm not sure if it's going to be a scintillating, you know, performance, but I think it's going to be a dominant one.
Gabe, do you think Lara's the type of guy, we all know how good he is, he's given us actually some very exciting moments. Is he the type of guy, and again, we're not telling guys to change their style, because you're not going to do that. You are what you are. Square pegs do not die round. But do you think Lara, if he has a chance to finish or really have like this spectacular ending, do you think based on the fact he is, in essence, campaigning for a Canelo fight, needs to do something where his fights end in exclamation point and not periods?
No, I think your original point was just dead on the money. I think he is who he is. I mean, sometimes the given circumstances may change and require him to be more, of a risk taker like he did with Angulo. But, the guy, that's been the theme of his whole life as a pro, is you got to be more exciting. And he just is what he is, you know. Kind of a
Gabe,
you know.
But, Gabe, in his defense, there have been a couple of fights I found to be entertaining. The Angulo fight we liked. I thought the Molina fight got interesting at the end. I don't think he's as good or as slick as Rigondeaux, which makes him more appealing. Gabe, Chad Dawson made it official. I heard about this in December. Has signed with Al Haymon. I find it interesting because Al Heyman's involved in this Golden Boy mix. I think Al Haymon, there's a chance. There's a certain reason why he's signing other fighters and not necessarily bringing them over to Golden Boy. One of the rumors, and again, this is just a rumor, that Al Haymon may be starting basically up his own company. And he also signed Adonis Stevenson recently. And by the way, Gabe, is it just a coincidence that they have not announced a Fonfara fight on HBO leading into a prelude for Sergey Kovalev? Is that just a coincidence?
Yeah, not a coincidence at all. I've heard the same thing about the company. I knew this signing was coming. It's interesting. I mean, you see Al is just grabbing up all the talent. You know, when you dominate that way, and you have both the A sides and the B sides, and in some cases C sides, you can really control the market. And I think Al, you can't count him out at HBO. And if he decides to, I mean, he pretty much has his own company at this point. All he needs to do is job these guys out, let everybody else do the promotional work. He's operated that way for years, so this is nothing really new. It's going to be interesting to see where the chips fall.
And the Gabe, the other rumor is that a guy that might be looking around Heyman's way down the line, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., believe it or not. And, Gabe, real quickly, Antonio Tarver last week got arrested for gambling debts. Gabe, I'd hate to say that I'm not surprised, but this has been known for years. Antonio Tarver likes to play the numbers, and I hate to see this, but this is another sad story, and I'm going to tell people, don't blame boxing, because if you can't control your finances, and he's made some money, this is not on the sport of boxing. It's not on the business. This is squarely on the individual.
This is clearly not learning from your environment. I mean, this is the oldest story in the game. You guys have a finite amount of time to make money, and you've got to live a very long time after you're done with the sport because it's really in the first quarter of your life and it's over. And then, you know, you got to be smarter than this. So, yeah, you can't really blame the game, especially if you refuse to learn from it.
So there you have it. That's it for this week's edition of The Next Round. I'd like to thank everyone that made this show possible. Thank you for calling in. So on behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.